For example, what would take them, startup founders, say 4 to 5 years to grow to $1 million ARR, we help founders do that in less than 50% of the time, around 2 years. And we help them get there by spending very less amount of money. So think about it as the cash efficiency is so high that by spending about 100K investment, they get to that 1 million ARR. And we also coach them, this is very important, we also coach them to keep control of their business and have the option to choose the path they want to take, right? So they can either go a VC high scale, or they can build a company for a strategic acquisition in a few years, or be a founder forever.
Hello and welcome to the Indian Startup Show. I am Neil Patel, and today I am joined by my special guest, Shekhar Nair. He's the partner and co-founder of Upeka. Upeka is a business accelerator for early stage SaaS startups. They help founders build value-based startups, not vanity-based startups. So in this episode, he talks about why they focus only on SaaS startups. We talk about pricing strategies, talk about launching strategies, and talk about getting your first customers, talk about co-founder issues, and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Shekhar. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Yeah, hi, Neil. Happy to join your show, and thank you for having me on your program.
Excellent. Please tell the listeners what you do.
We help SaaS startup founders grow their business, and we run a business accelerator. We have a very laser-sharp focus for helping SaaS startup founders, and we help them in growing their business very fast, cash efficiently, and without losing founder optionality. Mm-hmm. So I did mention a few words here, terms like growing fast, cash efficiently, and not losing founder optionality. So I think I should take a second to explain that.
Please do.
For example, what would take them, startup founders, say 4 to 5 years to grow to $1 million ARR, we help founders do that in less than 50% of the time. So less than, around 2 years. And we help them get there by spending very less amount of money. Mm. So think about it as the cash efficiency is so high that by spending about 100K investment, they get to that 1 million ARR. Mm-hmm. And we also coach them. This is very important. We also coach them to keep control of their business and have the option to choose the path they want to take, right? So they can either go a VC high scale, or they can build a company for a strategic acquisition in a few years, or be a founder forever. So many of the founders don't have that optionality. They get, when investors, angel investors come in, they get into deals that are based, not great terms, and they lose a lot of control of their business. They lose ownership in their business. Mm-hmm. And we coach the founders, mm-hmm. and this is meant for SaaS, right? But SaaS founders to be able to grow their business mm-hmm. fast, cash efficiently, and without losing founder optionality.
All right, interesting stuff. Why specifically focus on SaaS then?
Yeah, so interesting. So maybe I should start by saying a few words about SaaS then explain to you why we focus on SaaS. Yeah. Because if the context of SaaS is missing, then why we focus on SaaS may not make sense, right? So, previously or traditionally, what we used to do is we sell our software to customers, and they pay us for one time, and they put the software on the premise. Basically, they're owning it, right? And we provide them with an annual maintenance, and they pay us for that annual maintenance contract, right? And that is for upgrading to new versions or features for that product that they have bought. Mm. What if software was like utility on tap? Mm. We are all used to a lot of utility services today, whether it is our mobile phones, whether it is electricity, whether it is water, it's all like utility on tap, right? You want to use it, you want to access it from the internet, you want to pay as you use it, and you don't want to, you really don't want to own it, but it is like you're renting it, right? Mm. Now that is software as a service. Why are we focusing on that?
Yeah.
So when we try to help our founders, one is we also have a thesis that, we believe that this software as a service is going to explode, especially in India. Mm. So if our focus on SaaS allows this giving maximum effectiveness for our startup founders, mm-hmm. because they can learn from each other. And this is probably one of its kind, right? Because if you take a YC, or if you take a 500 startups, or if you take any of the accelerators today, they are all looking at multiple business models. By staying focused on the SaaS business model, right, we can actually do a lot more justice to our founders. We can find, the data intelligence that we gather from all these startups will become much more relevant and effective to startup founders to be able to predict how they can grow in terms of reaching inflection points and thereby growing their business, right? So we clearly now stand out as a thought leader in SaaS because all that we do and what we have been doing in the last 4 years, and I mean in at Upeka, which is our accelerator, by the way, and it's working with SaaS startups.
Interesting stuff. As well as the most important question for people listening is, what are you looking for then in terms of the team experience? How do I get onto the accelerator?
There are so many deserving founders. And who do not, all of them will not have the opportunity to get funded by VCs. There are because most of these people, they have good ideas. They are niche ideas that can be built into maybe a $50 million business or a $100 million business. And the VCs may not see that market and say that, okay, this can be a $1 billion business, and they may not be supported by that, right? So we see that there is a lot of deserving founders who have very good vision in terms of building products and solving a problem for the customer. But then when it comes to creating that, building that as a business, right, and knowing how to develop that SaaS flywheel, which flywheel by itself is a big concept, right? We can talk about that. But building that SaaS flywheel, that itself is huge. So what we are looking for is, we want to make sure that the founders that we take into our accelerator are coachable. Okay, so they're not assholes who come in and say, I can't learn. So that's very important that they are coachable. They are also people who actually can work within a tribe of other founders, which means learn from other founders, give their learning to other founders, which is also very important for us, right? We also look at the fact that what they are doing, that problem is a high value problem that they're trying to solve. And the last thing is that this should be a global problem, because then we can actually help them scale their business and scale it faster.
Awesome stuff. And so you've been doing it 5 years. Can you give like examples of companies that have gone through the accelerator?
Is we have a company out of Ahmedabad that joined us when they were about, in monthly recurring revenue of about 15K to 18K. And now they're doing over 2 million in ARR, in annual recurring revenue. And the fact is that they're generating insane amount of profit and wealth for the founders and the team, just because, Ahmedabad is a very, very reasonable, cost-effective place. They're able to get all their customers, most of their customers are in the US paying for them. And they're able to do that sitting, out of Ahmedabad, spending very little, right? So, that's an example. There's another company in our initial first cohort out of Pune that joined us, roughly when they were about the same monthly recurring revenue. And now they are being supported by strategic angel investors, and they have a clear path to $100 million revenue target, right? So we are looking for this coachability, high value problem, global applicability, and we help them, with the rest of the stuff.
Looking at your website, the thing that hits me is like, don't be a vanity SaaS, be a value SaaS business. Explain that. What do you mean by vanity SaaS?
So what we mean by vanity SaaS is, until you are ready to take money, and until you know that the money that you're taking in is generating more money than you have taken in. For example, if I take $1 and I invest $1 in my business, I should generate more than $1 of ARR. If I'm doing that, then I have a cash machine and I can go take money, right? So value SaaS is about building without taking money, even if the money is thrown to you. See, today, at least in the US, and we are seeing the trend happen all over, right, is cash is slowly moving towards becoming a commodity where it is easy to access cash. And many a times your investor may say, okay, let me put in some money because they want to get in and participate in that opportunity early on, right?
Yeah.
Our recommendation to our founders is, until you find your SaaS flywheel, you make it work, right? Don't go take money.
Mm.
Focus on getting the SaaS flywheel, because even if you take the money, spend money to acquire customers, that is not going to prove that your business is working. Because the moment you stop investing money in that, right, you may realize that your business is not growing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for us, maybe this is a, I should take a segue to tell you what, when I say about, you know, SaaS flywheel.
Yeah, please do.
What I mean by that is, people should first look at developing the fundamentals of the SaaS business. And in any flywheel, as you know, right, it is very difficult to get the wheel moving. You need a lot of force exerted on it to get the wheel moving. But once the wheel starts moving, then it is also difficult to stop the spinning of the wheel, right? Unless there is some other external resistance, right? Mm-hmm. So that energy is being built in, and you're kind of like building a mechanical battery that will work by itself, right? So in the SaaS business context, what we are talking about is finding the right market choice, making sure that you have the right problem choice, ensuring that the SaaS founders have evaluated and determined how to price the product through a value-based pricing model, understanding things like what should be your gameplay choice, going after an SMB versus if you're going after an enterprise, what should be your gameplay? Should you land and then expand into the customer? You can crank this engine, right? And attract, engage prospects, convert, that is a conversion, right? In the funnel, you're converting to paid customers. Mm. You then end up at the bottom of the funnel. You want to make sure that you retain them through a high NPS.
Yeah.
And you also want to make sure that your churn is low. You want to expand revenues of existing customers, which is another thing, right? Mm. Which is a very important thing about SaaS is you bring your net revenue retention to more than 100%, and you grow fast through referrals.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually turns the flywheel. So, and I think this is very important to understand that in SaaS, you are always starting, because SaaS, maybe I didn't touch upon this, is that, see, in SaaS, it is not just about, when I talked about the deployment and the on-premise, etc., the most important thing about the SaaS business is the recurring nature of the business, right? So your customer is paying you on a recurring basis. So the next year when you start off, you are starting off with the revenues that you have generated from the last year. So there is a compounding effect. And this SaaS flywheel, once it is in place, your business will start growing rapidly.
Yeah.
Now you have a cash generating machine where you're investing $1.
Mm.
And if you're able to get more than $1, and the founder optionality has been maintained so far, we give the reins to the founder to go the path that he wants to, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he thinks that, okay, now if I put $1 million in this, now that I've got my SaaS flywheel, I will be able to generate a significant amount of ARR, then that person will go VC scale.
Mm.
But he's not vanity SaaS, because he's still taking money in the right proportion and right time. The thought process is to take money without losing control,
mm-hmm.
without taking money in terms by burning equity
mm-hmm.
inefficiently, and by ensuring that you're taking money at the right time
mm-hmm.
from the right party.
Yeah.
That's a very important thing, right? And a lot of the founders are not coached that way. They think that the success of their business is tied to whether they're able to get a Series A or a Series B investment. But that's not really what it is. And with a SaaS business, you can actually have different paths as outcomes for you. Because if I have to use an example to illustrate this, right? Say a company gets exited at $50 million, and the founders own 80% of the company. And if a company gets exited at $300 million, the founders own 15% of the company. It's very similar outcomes.
Mm.
So there's nothing wrong about having an exit at a $50 million for that founder. If he or she knows that the business, the market, the problem that they're solving, the applicability of the market, etc., is such that they can get to a $50 million more confidently, than getting to a $300 million by taking more investments and trying to burn money, then they should be able to go and get the $50 million. Because what we care for is the founder outcome. We want the founders to make money. And the other thing, Neil, important thing to point out is that even when they take money to reach that $300 million, right, you may be surprised that while many of them succeed and have good financial outcomes, many of them, right, while it's a good outcome for the business, yeah, and for the investors, and for some investors, you can't say all investors, yeah, for some investors, it may be that it is not come for the founders because of so many liquidation preferences on top of them, and as common shareholders getting the last portion of their share. So I think you need to take everything into account, right? The tombstones and the graveyards are much, much bigger than the trophy winners. Mm. And I truly believe that, the people reach the finish line and they get, things get printed in the press and people look at what is shown in the media as it's a vanity metric, right? Yeah. Is looked at as the success outcome. Mm. But you should really ask, what we want to ask is, what did the founder get out of that?
Mm. Oh, interesting stuff. Any advice on getting your first customers? Any tip? Any thoughts on that? Yeah. Any strategies on that?
Yeah. Actually, there's a principle called the principle of effectuation. And one of our advisors, Professor Saras, is the pioneer in this concept. Yeah. She's a professor at Darden in Virginia, University of Virginia. And I think the main thing is, when you try to get your first customer, and this is where everybody, all founders have a challenge, you should co-create with the customer. And what I mean by co-creating with customer is through the process of effectuation, where you have to ask, right, to the customer to understand what his problem is. Customer should feel that you really care about his problems and that he or she, right, is not having his affordable loss, whatever is the loss for the customer is what you are asking him or her is within that affordable loss, whether it is time, whether it is a pilot, right, whether it is deployment, any of those things, as long as the customer believes that you care about their problem and that you are not asking anything beyond their affordable loss, you can very well co-create with the customer and find your first customer. Mm. And such a customer, the good thing is that the customer will be very happy to refer you to others because that idea came out of them, not just you. So one of the things that we tell our founders is, right, and by the way, in our accelerator, the startups come in a little bit later, so they already have first customers. Mm. But what we tell even earlier entrepreneurs is, try to co-create with your customers. Understand the problem very well. Have significant amount of prospective customer conversations. So whoever you think are potential customers, you have significant amount of customer conversations to understand what is their problem and how you can actually help them. And when you that's why today we call it ideal customer persona, right? Because you have to dive more into details of understanding the customer, not just as an organization, but as that individual who is making the choice of putting you in there and not somebody else in there. What is in it for him?
Yeah.
What are the risks he or she is taking, right? And how can you help in aligning with that goal of that person who is giving you a chance to come into that organization. So I think that's something that early entrepreneurs should be looking at. And once you get to, unaffiliated, say 10 customers, 10 unaffiliated customers, then the picture changes a little bit, where you now, what you should really be doing is trying to get referrals from those customers, servicing those customers well, and then trying to ensure that the problem that you're solving for those customers, you find the right set of potential customers who have a similar problem. So we're just sharpening the ICP. The ideal customer profile needs to be sharpened, and some startups make the mistake of going all around, right? So one of the things that we do in our program is to help sharpen that ICP for them.
Oh, interesting stuff. In terms of pricing, I suppose that's really important as well for first-time founders, well, how much they should price their product. Any strategies on that regarding, you know, free trials or discounted trials, try before you buy or something like that? Anything that's come up in your time at Accelerator?
Yeah, pricing is a very important point, as you mentioned, right? Even before you look at, just tips to specific tips of in terms of pricing a particular product, right? The important thing for us to understand is, you know, pricing, one is it's determined by the market. And second is the more value you are able to deliver, the more pricing you can demand, the price you can demand, and the market will offer that to you, right? So the way we see it is that if you are able to find and understand from your customer what is really the value that you are able to offer them, down to the point where you are able to put that down in dollar value, right? Then you can definitely price it based on an ROI model where you say, hey, if I am giving you so much value in dollars, then definitely you will be happy to share that with me, right? So I can price it that. The other important thing from a SaaS perspective is, I briefly mentioned about this, which is once the flywheel starts working, you are expanding revenues of existing customers. So one of the things that you want to do in your pricing model is to figure out accesses of value-based pricing. Mm. So for example, can I offer this value to multiple users? And as I increase the number of users, can I charge, can I price more? Can I offer, additional value in terms of problem solving, right? So I wouldn't look at it as product features, but I would look at it as the types of problems that you're solving, right? Mm. And if you're able to solve those kind of problems, more kind of problems, why not charge them more? So pricing has to be based on that. There is an element of pricing where you're also going to look at it. That's a base model pricing where you're going to look at it as saying, who are your competitors? What are they pricing? How can I price better?
Yeah.
Finally, I think the people who have learned to price well are people who really have created categories for their product and created a small, you can call it like a container in the brain of the customers, saying that, hey, you know what? If I'm thinking about, router means it's a Cisco, right? Mm. If I'm thinking about cloud means it's an Amazon or a Microsoft. So that kind of a container can you create? And the ultimate would be if you can drive to the point, right? Which is where all this market positioning, your messaging, right, is so important. Mm. Is can you drive to the point where your customer has a line item on his budget for your product? Then pricing becomes, not just a competition. It is not just this, right? It is what the market is ready to offer, and you can keep increasing that.
Awesome stuff. So in terms of the launching strategies then, what are your thoughts on that? And do I perhaps just have a landing page with an email box, or do I build a crappy version of an MVP with a few features, et cetera, et cetera? Any strategies, any thoughts on that?
See, in SaaS, first thing you have to do is look at the gameplay. So is your ideal customer persona, are you looking at SMB market, or is it going to be enterprise? If it is SMB, then you also know that what you can demand from an annual contract value, right? With or without value-based pricing is going to be much lesser than in an enterprise model, right? Mm. So that means from a unit economics point of view, you want to reach out to the customer where we're talking of assisted buying, right? So attracting the customer and converting them through more of a hands-off model or a do-it-yourself model, right? Mm. Where they should be able to come into your site. You should be able to position your messaging so clearly, should be able to show them the pricing. So your landing pages has to be so effective that, people can come in, understand exactly what the value you're offering, how much you're pricing them, and they should be able to go in and have either they should be scheduling a demo with you, or it should be a free trial, right?
Yeah.
Or they will be buying a paid plan. If it is an enterprise gameplay, then you're looking at it a little bit differently because your annual contract value or your ACVs are much higher. Mm-hmm. You can look at a strategy, you actually spend a lot more time in trying to convert them, right? Mm-hmm. So, and where the website may not be the landing page may not be the most critical, right?
Yeah.
The entire process from start to finish for an enterprise will be equally important.
Yeah, just going back to the accelerator then. Obviously, you must have dealt with so many Indian startups. What's been like the biggest insight so far?
What happens is that until a startup becomes a lot more matured, you know, just looking at lagging metrics like revenue is not good. So people may be making invisible progress, but it may not translate directly into a revenue. The other thing that we learned as an insight is that always the growth curve for these startups are not a straight line or an exponential curve. It is mostly a zigzag curve with a lot of S curves in the middle. So during that any point of time when you see that you have a flat line, right, in that Z or an S curve, what you will see is that it is because, you know, the people are between two inflection points. And our insight has been that startups who are able to get to these inflection points faster see significant growth or jump. Mm-hmm. Much faster. So you'll see that a startup is, you know, doing normal business for, you know, I mean, not showing any exemplary growth. Mm-hmm. These are all early stages I'm talking about, right? Exemplary growth for, say, 4 months or even 6 months, right? All of a sudden, they hit one inflection point. And that inflection point could be as simple as saying, I found my ideal customer persona, and now I'm able to have a very clear positioning for that segment. It could also be another simple thing could be like, underestimate this, but, you know, could be that I found my value-based pricing, mm-hmm. how to actually price the customer, because I was able to find the customer's value in terms of dollars, or I find what in that business will grow that is making me also grow, yeah. Right? So those kind of inflection points actually create a significant impact in the growth of the business. Mm. So that has been clearly one big insight that we have learned. The other insight that we have learned, and I'm not sure if this is new or not, but the insight is that, you know, if we are able to get this value SaaS flywheel correctly, you know, coaching of this value SaaS flywheel correctly done for startups, then we are talking of 75% of those startups will succeed.
Yeah.
And what does that success mean? They can take either of these three paths. They can go for a big, you know, high scale VC route, take a lot of money and grow aggressively. They can build a company for a strategic acquisition, or they can build the business so profitably that they can remain founder forever.
Yeah, you mentioned growing fast. So in terms of, let's say you invest in a company, what is it you want to see them do in a year's time, perhaps? What's like the main metrics, etc.?
Yeah, so the lagging metric obviously is revenues.
Yeah.
We want to see that startups are growing at a healthy clip, right? Which is initially I was mentioning this, is if the general standard is that it takes an early stage startup to reach $1 million of ARR in 4 to 5 years. We want them to get there in 2 years, right? That's what we want from a growth to from an ARR point. And then from that 1 million, then get them to a 10 million ARR, and then they're all set. Because most companies who have crossed that, who are reaching that 5 to 10 million range, and if they know how to build businesses in a value SaaS way, not a vanity SaaS way, they will not fail. The founders will make money out of that. Mm. So the key is to get them to that 1 million ARR first, and then from there to, you know, guide them to show the 5 million ARR. The beauty is, you know, what we are doing, the reason we are able to make that impact, and, you know, while I have to admit that we are still early on, right, we have a lot more long way to go, but it is not just our expertise in SaaS, right? It's not Prasanna or Rajan or mine or the team's expertise in SaaS alone, but we are, along with our expertise and proven SaaS business frameworks, one of the things that we bring into this accelerator, which is very different from many of the things that you will see, is there's a significant amount of peer learning that happens, which is a cohort-based peer learning and a tribe-based peer learning. And we shorten the time it takes for SaaS founders because they don't have to make the same mistake that somebody else has made. And since our core value is founder first, always the interest of our startup founders, right? We make sure that, you know, startups who come into the program are always getting access to the startups that who have faced the similar problems before.
Yeah.
And they are there to help them. And the crazy thing, I can tell you a little bit about the tribe, because I'm sure you know, it's difficult for people to even, you know, maybe even fathom about a tribe. Mm. The crazy thing I can tell you, right, which you may be then be able to relate, is all our cohort one startup founders are angel investors in Upeka, our accelerator. Mm-hmm. And based on the contribution that the startup founders are making to each other, they get warrants to buy shares of Upeka.
Yeah.
So I believe this is an unheard of model.
Yeah, definitely. No, I've not heard of that model before.
That is only one way, right, to show this. But the tribe is very cohesive and tries to help each other. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that we focus only on the SaaS business model only helps this further.
Yeah. Talking about Indian-based SaaS companies, on the website you've mentioned the entire B2B industry in India is less than the value of one value company, Splunk. This is after close to two decades of startups trying. There's not a single contender for a Microsoft equivalent from India. Thoughts on that? Talk about that.
Yeah, it's still true.
I was quite shocked by
that. It's changing. Yeah. It is. It's changing, mm-hmm. but it is still true, right?
Yeah.
The company that we can talk about when we talk about SaaS, mm-hmm. software as a service, that comes to mind is initially Zoho.
Yeah.
Right? The Vembu, Mr. Vembu, he has shown the world that you can bootstrap a company and build, you know, I don't know exactly his revenues, but 500 million plus revenues, right? Mm-hmm. And build a founder forever kind of a company. It's not easy to do that, but he has shown it already, right? Mm-hmm. To do that. Now, what is happening is with the likes of Freshworks, right? ChargeBee, Dhruva, so many companies that are fast, right? Becoming unicorns or billion-dollar companies. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that Freshworks will soon go IPO in the US. Mm-hmm. Outside of US, when you look at it, the SaaS ecosystem in India is developing very quickly. We are seeing significant amount of SaaS startups. Probably I can say, other than US and maybe Israel, right?
Yeah.
India is right there. And yes, the gap is very high because there are crazy companies in the US, whether it's a Microsoft or whether it is a Salesforce, or we're talking of, I don't want to even talk about the very, very large companies, right? Like the Apple or any mm-hmm. of those. But I mean, in SaaS, right? When we talk about it,
the
gap is huge. But the other trend I'm seeing also, which is relevant to this, is that previously it was thought of as how do you sit in India and get customers in the US? Or we'd call it as how do you hunt the whales, right? Sitting in India across the ocean, right? Things are beginning to change. And companies, startups like Kadims, WhatFix, right? Krish's ChargeBee are being able to win very large deals in the US sitting out of India. And then at appropriate times, of course, they will build, their own extension of teams in the local markets, mm-hmm. in those markets, right? But the fact that, you know, once it was thought of as, hey, is this even possible? That is changing. So today there's a lot of confidence for SaaS entrepreneurs to believe that they can also be like a Girish of Freshworks or a Sridhar Vembu, which is even more difficult, but completely bootstrapped of Zoho. So I think this gives us a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Exciting times there. Also on the website, you mentioned in one of your blog posts, talk about setting up incorporating in US rather than India. What were the sort of the pros and cons about that?
In fact, that blog post was written by me.
Oh, okay.
Indian entrepreneurs, right? So if they're looking at building large scale businesses in a value SaaS way, they have to have a global business as their strategy. And today, you know, no matter what we say, it's much easier from a global business strategy to actually go to the US market, whether it is for localization reasons, right? I'm sure Europe is also a big market, mm-hmm. but for various different reasons, culture, language, right? Just the fact that the markets in the US are ready to pay much more. Mm. We say it's easier to make a dollar than to make a rupee, even though the difference between a dollar is actually 74 times a rupee, right? But still, it's easier to make a dollar than a rupee. What we do is we say to the entrepreneurs, if you're looking at going global, then, and you know that your markets are in the US, then it makes sense for you to position yourself as a US company.
Yeah.
And we help guide them to be a Delaware company in the US and do the the right thing, right, to be able to do this.
Yeah.
It's not that we want to ask all our Indian citizens to move out of India and lose the economic advantage for India, right? That is not my intent. And I don't want an RBI or somebody running and coming after me for that. But the thing is, you look at all these parameters. You say, where do you want to grow your business?
Yeah.
Where is your revenue is going to come from? Who is going to be your investors? You know that the investor ecosystem is much stronger in the US.
True, yeah.
A lot of alternate funding mechanisms in US where cash is becoming a commodity.
Yeah.
So do the right thing that makes sense for you and your shareholders.
Interesting. Is there anything that you don't like about the startup industry in India? Anything you want to get off your chest? Any thoughts? Or is it all good?
No, startup industry in India, I mean, there is a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of tax related issues and a lot of process related issues, I would say, for startups that are trying to do things in India without being guided, and that makes it expensive, time consuming. Startups cannot focus on the business. Example would be like, say, if they want to take, they're an Indian company and they want to take investments from US, right? Well, things are possible. I'm not saying it's not possible. For a young startup founder, that's a huge distraction. He has to worry about, you know, the money is coming from the US. It's an investment. Compliance things are a hog, right? You have to make sure that you're not upsetting RBI. You're doing this. So, well, the way I see it is there's a lot more streamlining that is required in those areas to make life easy for... Similarly, if you look at the investor ecosystem, there's a lot of progress that has happened in India over the last, say, 10, 15 years, right? But still, it is not the same as in the US. In the US, if you ask me why the likes of Intel and the likes of Cisco and the likes of Microsoft, and so many big companies have become so successful and got, you know, significant amount of investments. All the investors were actually entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They were not people who were financiers or people, you know, who look at just numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, while we have come a long way, and in fact, I have to say that there are very, very impressive investors who really help founders who think about, you know, business in an entrepreneurial way. But still, there's a long way to go for in India, where we want to see a lot more of successful entrepreneurs coming back into the ecosystem and driving that ecosystem through funding and guiding and mentoring. Right? Mm-hmm. So that has to also happen.
Yeah. Last few questions then. What qualities should entrepreneurs have? What's like the main quality?
The main quality, I mean, there's a lot of qualities that an entrepreneur has. The fact that the entrepreneur is an entrepreneur shows that there is a significant amount of good qualities in that person, right? Otherwise, they will not be able to take the risk and do what they're doing, knowing all the challenges that's in front of them. From my life experience, if I look at it, right, because I was an entrepreneur myself in the US, and is that, you know, the journey is not always smooth. You're basically steering the ship through seas where, you know, it can get rough along the way many times, right? One of the things I see is that tough times is the true test of an entrepreneur, and how the entrepreneur rises in difficult situation actually makes the real difference. And the reason I wanted to touch upon this, you know, and not something else as a personality or as a characteristic of an entrepreneur is because of the times we are going through now, right? COVID has not been easy either. While there are some startups in our cohorts that have actually been favorably impacted through COVID, and that way SaaS actually is in the lucky quadrant, right? Where I would say that, you know, many of the software as a services business are not as badly impacted, and many of them are actually having a tailwinds because of COVID, right? Because of digitization, more work from home, more online-based processes, right? Workflows, everything. So the point I was trying to say is that test for an entrepreneur is actually happening now, right? If an entrepreneur is able to handle these situations well, not give up to the pressures. And when I say not give up to the pressures, it's most of the people take the attitude of saying things are going to get better, so let us wade through it. In fact, I did the same, right? And now when I look at it back, you know, that's a big learning, because that was the outcome, while I could, you know, bring about a small financial outcome, right? And something good for a small set of people, employees. It was not the outcome that we were actually working towards. Mm. So the point I want to say is, I might have digressed there, but the point I want to say is that, you know, it's not about expecting that things will get better and just stay the course. Mm. It is about having the guts to make tough decisions, ensuring that, you know, you look for making lemonades out of lemon. This is something I learned from Professor Saras, right? So how do you make lemonades out of lemon? You look for new opportunities. What is it that, because of that tough situation, what can I as an entrepreneur do differently to solve a problem differently for my customers? Yeah. And thereby I also make money, right?
Yeah.
So that whole characteristic of being able to rise in these kind of situations is what I think I would pick as the most significant aspect of a true entrepreneur. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what advice would you give to like first time founders then? What must they be focusing on?
First time founders, one of the things that we see is that most of the startups, especially first time founders, the reason they fail or get negatively impacted is because of co-founder issues. Ensuring that first-time founders get guidance in terms of how to work with co-founders is super critical. Mm. Okay. A lot of times people make certain assumptions, have co-founders come in, no responsibilities assigned, nobody knows who is the CEO, nobody knows that. People don't differentiate between founder responsibilities versus management responsibilities, and therefore get stuck with decision-making, with taking tough decisions. Nobody understands how equity is to be used. The analogy we use is, it's a baby, the organization is a baby, and the person who takes care of the baby is different as the time goes, right? And are you looking at equity the same way to be able to help your organization grow? Or have you equally divided your equity, not knowing what is going to happen in the future, right? Mm. So there's a lot of those kind of very basic things that first-time founders should take help and make sure that they are able to resolve these basic issues. Second point, there are many points, but I'll stop the second point, which is the mountain to climb. Many of the times we find that people have decided the mountain to climb. And when we and peers try to help founders to say, hey, how do you climb this mountain to go to that treasure island, right? On the top of the mountain, how do you climb that? What resources to use? Which part of the mountain to go, right? What are the techniques for that mountain climbing? Mm. Well, we can do, once you have chosen the wrong mountain to climb, it's very difficult to get the startup founder to go say, hey, let me completely pivot and go climb a new mountain. Because no matter what I do, how well I do this, when I climb this initial mountain, on the top, the treasure island doesn't have any treasure. I think this is a very important point, right? Because even as an accelerator, when we try, we can try to help them with all aspects. But when we come and have to tell them, hey, you know what? What did you learn? Did you learn that if you climb this mountain, there is going to be a treasure on top? Mm-hmm. Right? It's very difficult to make them climb a new mountain.
Yeah.
So the startup founder, initial founder should know that there is a very good founder market fit when he is starting the company. If he is coming from a B2C domain and thinking that I'm excited about this particular B2B business, he has to make sure that he has the right DNA in the company. If it is not that founder, who else is the one who is going to be able to help bring that DNA to be able to conquer that mountain, for example, right? Mm. That's a very important thing, because I think there's two things, making sure that having the right structure, bringing the right, having the right understanding among co-founders, and making sure that you have a founder market fit.
Yeah.
Because we can teach product market fit, but a founder market fit is very important that they bring in, right?
Listen, last question then. For people who want more information on you and Accelerator, what must they do?
So I think I should speak a little bit about the Accelerator, yeah, because that'll give an idea for people in terms of, not only how to reach, but also understanding how we work, because I don't want this to be assumed as, this is only me sitting here and trying to do these things, right? Upeka is one of the four Brahma Vihara. We call it Brahma Vihara, or it's the divine emotion in which comes in Buddhist meditation, right? So we really mean that we want, and if I want to explain that to a layman, right, from a Upeka point of view, the word is actually equanimity. And equanimity, if I have to explain what equanimity is, it is serenity. Serenity, I think everyone knows.
Yeah.
And being unruffled and being impartial, right, when you look at things. So that is what we stand for as Upeka, right? And my partner Prasanna is a brainchild for this. And when I heard what Prasanna wanted Upeka to be, it resonated with what would be a flow for me in life, right? And I joined him in that journey. Mm-hmm. And then we were fortunate to bring in our third co-founder, Rajan, right, who actually worked with us to make this actually a reality, right? Yeah. So whatever was Prasanna's vision for Upeka was made a reality by Rajan and us working together. So that is really what we are about as founders. Now, what is happening is we are taking from pioneer phase or an innovation phase to a settler phase.
Yeah.
And we are fortunate that we have a strong team who is bringing in this to be able to scale and look at the tribe and look at data intelligence to help our startup founders, right? So all the various pillars which are required for helping startup founders grow, right? So that's something we're doing.
Yeah.
So the best way for people to follow us is to follow Prasanna, Rajan, and me on social media. Mm-hmm. And I want to be honest, I'm not very big on Twitter, but Prasanna is, right? And Prasanna is considered like a thought leader in SaaS. Mm-hmm. So definitely they should be following Prasanna. We have a SaaS handbook that we have released for first-time founders that is available in Amazon. They can go reach that. And I think more importantly than anything, the best way for SaaS founders to know what we have to offer and what they can expect is to talk to our tribe members. Mm-hmm. So we are now 100 and we will be more than 120 now with this latest cohort, which we started last week.
Yeah.
So we will be 120 startup founders strong and working with 62, right, startups from the range of $100,000 ARR or thereabouts to $6 million of ARR companies, right? That's the range. And anyone should be able to reach out to these startup founders and ask them that, right? From our perspective for the future, we are looking at impacting 1,000. We want to impact 1,000 SaaS founders and get them meaningful founder outcomes. And with their win, we see a significant win for Upeka.
Actually, one last question then. You mentioned the future. What is the future of SaaS then?
Future of SaaS is actually very big.
Yeah.
We, as I mentioned to you, we're looking at, the Indian SaaS ecosystem only exploding. And there are some senior SaaS founders expecting that market to grow to several hundred billions. And the future of SaaS is actually very rosy, especially whether things like pandemic exists or not. People have now learned. This is fortunately, I should say, because we none of us want this pandemic, but has changed the behavior for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that behavior is only helping digitization, and is only helping businesses that service online.
You mentioned pandemic. What's the one thing you've learned most about yourself during the pandemic?
Okay. So what I've learned is that, the pandemic has actually magnified what our relationships are to different things, right? So whatever your relationship is. So if my relationship with my family has been good, then this pandemic has given me more time to be with my family, and I've enjoyed that time. Personally for me, I have to say that it's, I can't complain. But when I look at what has happened to the world, and when I see that, things have not been really good, right? In terms of people getting affected by that, people having complications, etc. That makes me sad, makes me feel bad, right? So personally for me, it's like you're having to innovate. You're having to find new ways of doing your business, which has been our biggest challenge, right? Mm-hmm. We had to take time off to say, hey, let us stop, look at how we can run these cohorts in a completely digital manner.
Yeah.
But that's personally for me, right? But yeah. If you look at it from a business perspective, it is actually, there's a lot of challenges. People like to all be together. When you want to have a tribe, that has to be effective. Mm. I mean, this is probably the first time a tribe is trying to be put together as a tribe and working as a tribe. Tribe, the concept of tribe is about cooperation among people and, being together and interacting with each other in a very social manner, right?
Awesome stuff. Shekhar, thank you for coming to the show today. Much appreciated.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing me on the show. And I hope it benefits some of the early SaaS founders.
I wish you all the best. Please stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks to Shekhar for coming on the show today. I much appreciate it. Check out upeka.io. Thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. And if you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet @IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. Once again, thank you and goodbye. And please stay safe.